This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
I'm T. Shao Ik. This is the Daily Digest on a bigger picture. And I'm with Juliet Jacobs and Lim Soo. And today, over the weekend, something rather transformative happened over social media. So this wasn't a huge movement. It didn't get the millions of views and shares, but it did make a significant impact on someone's life.
Yep. So on Saturday, Facebook user Haiza Izani from Malacca found a 10 ringgit note that had a personal inscription on it, which read, "The last cash given by Dad on May 21st, 2010, Friday, 7:10 a.m. I love you, Dad." So Haiza was touched and intrigued by that note, and she deduced that the ringgit note held sentimental value for the person who had owned it, and that the owner was most likely searching for it. So she posted a picture of it on Facebook, urging her friends and followers to keep sharing it until they could find the original owner of the note.
Yeah, and that post was shared over 25,000 times with over 8,000 likes, and it made its way from Facebook feeds to Twitter and was even reported on online portals. And on Sunday, it was screen capped and sent via WhatsApp to Anne Mala Yesudas, also from Malacca. And Anne was the young woman who had written that inscription 9 years ago at the age of 17 after her dad passed away unexpectedly.
So the story behind the note is heart-wrenching. So Anne's late father had given her the 10 ringgit note when he dropped her off at school on the morning of May 21st. Unfortunately, that was the last time that she saw him, as he met with a fatal accident later in the day. And so after that day, she wrote the inscription on that note and always kept it with her as sort of a reminder of her father, right? And this was until September 2018, when her purse was stolen. And to her, losing the note hurt more than losing her purse, whatever valuables were in it. And she had not thought that she would actually ever see this 10 ringgit note again.
Yeah, and so she's been reunited with that 10 ringgit note now. And, you know, the virtual movement of Haiza's initial post shows you just how vast the connections of social media can be. And the reach of her post, obviously, was able to go beyond her networks when online portals like World of Buzz and Says.com also wrote about it. And, you know, more and more people then shared it.
Yeah, you know, because we often talk about the dark side of social media, you know, its negative impact on our social interactions, our relationships, even our mental health. And, you know, not to mention the insidious presence of big tech in our lives, many of which are social media companies like Facebook, where they are mining data from us. I mean, just last week, we did a story on Daily Digest about Amnesty International's report called Surveillance Giants, which showed that, you know, Facebook and Google, they've just amassed unparalleled power over the digital world by harvesting and monetizing the personal data of billions of people.
That's right.
You know, Amnesty was arguing that their insidious control of our digital lives that actually undermines the very essence of privacy, which is one of the defining human rights challenges of our era.
Yeah, I remember when we discussed that report, we were talking about, you know, is it time for us to quit social media?
Shut it all down, cut it all off.
And, you know, the story of Haiza and Anne and this 10 ringgit note kind of, well, for me at least, reminds me of why we originally signed on to join social networks in the first place all those years ago. It was just to connect with people. It was to keep in touch with people that we may not see on an everyday basis. It wasn't always about getting lots of followers and influence or watching, you know, endless silly videos or even getting trolled online. It was once a safe and intimate place where we knew who we were talking to and didn't have to worry about issues like data privacy. And if I think back to my Facebook posts in those early days, they were quite nonsensical.
It was the
kind of stuff that I could say to a friend, face-to-face to a friend, and it felt like that's what I was doing. I was speaking to a group of friends.
And it was so much more innocent, I suppose, if you want to use that.
Yes.
And, you know, it wasn't a case of, you know, getting as many people on your list as possible. It was just a small way of reconnecting with lost, you know, friends, people from your high school, whatever.
That's right.
I mean, that's how it was for me anyway.
And now social media seems to be more of like you're creating a separate personality of yourself on that platform rather than a way for you to connect with the people that you know. And so today, or more often than not as well, social media has become a place where values and ideologies divide us rather than connect us. It's a platform where
We see people hide behind their relative anonymity to make abusive, discriminative comments on issues like race, religion, gender, sexuality, and politics. While Gonim, he's a computer engineer, internet activist who was involved in, he was involved in creating the Facebook page that sparked the Arab Spring
in Egypt. Yeah,
in Egypt. Yeah, and he witnessed firsthand how polarizing social media could be. So he actually shared at a TED Talk in Geneva about how the revolution on social media went from liberating to heartbreaking.
While it's true that polarization is primarily driven by our human behavior, social media shapes this behavior and magnifies its impact. Say you want to say something that is not based on a fact. Pick a fight or ignore someone that you don't like. This is all natural human impulses. But because of technology, acting on these impulses is only one click away. In my view, there are five critical challenges facing today's social media. First, we don't know how to deal with rumors. Rumors that confirm people's biases are now believed and spread among millions of people. Second, we create our own echo chambers. We tend to only communicate with people that we agree with. And thanks to social media, we have mute, unfollow, and block everybody else. Third, online discussions quickly descend into angry mobs. All of us probably know that. It's as if we forget that the people behind screens are actually real people and not just avatars. And fourth, it became really hard to change our opinions. Because of the speed and brevity of social media, we are forced to jump into conclusions and write sharp opinions in 140 characters about complex world affairs. And once we do that, it lives forever on the internet, and we are less motivated to change these views, even when new evidence arises. Fifth, and in my point of view, this is the most critical. Today, our social media experiences are designed in a way that favors broadcasting over engagements, posts over discussions, shallow comments over deep conversations. It's as if we agreed that we are here to talk at each other instead of talking with each other.
Are you feeling dark enough yet?
I felt that way in story one.
All right. Just about ready to close down your social media account? Well, maybe not just yet, because sometimes, very, very rarely, social media can unite us, as I feel was the case with Haiza's post about Anne's 10 ringgit note. So in 2009, tech anthropologist Stefana Broadbent spoke at a TED Talk about her research on how she thinks communication technology is capable of actually cultivating deeper relationships, bringing love across barriers like distance and workplace rules. So here's a clip from Stefana's talk.
Recently, some sociologists from Facebook. Facebook is, I mean, the channel that you would expect is the most enlarging of all channels. And an average user, Cameron Marlowe from Facebook, has about 120 friends, but he actually has two-way exchanges with about 4 to 6 people on a regular basis, depending on his gender. Academic research on instant messaging also shows 100 people on buddy lists, but fundamentally people chat with 2, 3, 4, anyway, less than 5. My own research on cell phones and voice calls showed that 80% of the calls are actually made to 4 people. 80%. And when you go to Skype, it's down to 2 people. A lot of sociologists actually are quite disappointed. I mean, I've been a bit disappointed sometimes when I saw this data, you know, all this deployment just for 5 people. And some sociologists actually feel that that it's a closure, it's a cocooning, that we're disengaging from the public. And I would like to show you that if we actually look at who is doing it and from where they're doing it, actually there's an incredible social transformation.
So what is this social transformation that Stefana is talking about? She gives examples of how important internet connectivity is to our intimate relationships. We may only talk to a handful of people, but they are truly meaningful engagements. So for instance, she describes how Filipina migrant women working away from the Philippines use Skype to engage with and parent their children who are back home. And she explains how these connections play out in our daily lives, especially when we spend so much time at work and abiding by institutional rules.
people have taken this amazing possibility of actually being in contact all through the day or in all type of situations. And they're doing it massively. The Pew Institute, which produces good data on a regular basis on, for instance, in the States, says that, and I think this number is conservative, 50% of anybody with email access at work is actually doing private email from his office. I really think that the number is conservative. In my own research, we saw that the peak for private email is actually 11 o'clock in the morning, whatever the country. 75% of people admit doing private conversations from work on their mobile phones. 100% are using text.
So apart from private email, we are also accessing our social media feeds all the time. And when you're scrolling through your social media feed or deleting messages from your family chat group, sounds familiar.
Guilty.
Do you think about what makes something click for you? Because for me, when I'm scrolling through, right, and nowadays where you have so much to scroll through, really, you can just keep scrolling and you still find things from today itself. It's usually the short, punchy ones that really grab your attention, like grab my attention for me. And if it's a long, rambly post, I tend to just scroll past.
Mm-hmm. All right.
What about you two?
I love to know about people's families. So, I mean, the people on my feed generally are people who are close to me, right? So if they're showing stuff about their kids or their families, you know, and heartwarming stories. So again, like this story, those are the ones that I tend to reach out for. If I can see it's a ranty sort of post, I kind of ignore it.
Mm. Yeah, same for me. It's got to have that personal connection.
Yeah.
And again, only if it's people that I'm close to and want to know enough about their lives. I'll also admit there are a lot of people on my Facebook list that, you know, they're just acquaintances.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
And you add because you sort of think you want to keep in touch with them. But I'll also be honest, I don't know if I came across, say, Haiza's post, whether I would share it. Sometimes I feel compelled to share posts about, you know how sometimes you see a family member, their elderly relative has gone missing
mm-hmm.
Or children have gone missing. I feel compelled to share those. Perhaps there's that sense of you want to do something to help somebody, even from a distance.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I always do that for people who are trying to look for homes for their stray puppies.
Okay.
Those are the ones you'll tend to see me. If they're not sarcastic, like comics, it tends to be, you know, people looking to home.
I've seen those.
Yeah. Judgy much.
The sarcastic comics?
Judgy much.
No, the stray puppies. And, it's that personal touch again, isn't it? It's something mm-hmm. that appeals to you.
To you personally,
yeah.
Exactly.
And so in another TED Talk, BuzzFeed's publisher Dao Wen spoke about how to create content that goes viral. So here's an excerpt from that talk.
The question I get most frequently is, how do you make something go viral? The question itself is misplaced. It's not about the something. It's about what the people doing the something, reading or watching, what are they thinking? Now, most media companies, when they think about metadata, they think about subjects or formats. What if, instead of tagging what articles or videos are about, what if we asked, how is it helping our users do a real job in their lives? Last year, we started a project to formally categorize our content in this way. We called it cultural cartography. It formalized an informal practice that we've had for a really long time. Don't just think about the subject matter, think also about, and in fact, primarily, about the job that your content is doing for the reader or the viewer. First up, humor. Makes me laugh. There's so many ways to make somebody laugh. You could be laughing at someone, you could laugh at specific internet humor, you could be laughing at some good, clean, inoffensive dad jokes. This is me. Identity. People are increasingly using media to explain, this is who I am. This is my upbringing, this is my culture, this is my fandom, this is my guilty pleasure, and this is how I laugh about myself. Helps me connect with another person. This is one of the greatest gifts of the internet. It's amazing when you find a piece of media that precisely describes your bond with someone. This is a group of jobs that helps me do something, helps me settle an argument, helps me learn something about myself or another person, or helps me explain my story. This is a group of jobs that makes me feel something, makes me curious or sad or restores my faith in humanity.
So I think going back to Haiza's post, For me, what it shows us is that we gravitate towards content that helps us connect with another person, that which is what Dao Nguyen described as one of the things that people should look out for in viral content. Yeah. Just like you said, Juliet, you share or gravitate towards posts about stray puppies looking for homes, right? It's something that means something to you and means something to the person who's posted it. And in Anne's case, her grief over losing a loved one is something that really everybody can share in, that we understand what that would feel like regardless of who or where we are.
Yeah, I mean, just reading that post, I mean, coincidentally, my mother's death anniversary is on the 21st of May. Mm. And, you know, I'm like her as well. Like, I keep the last few coins that my mother gave me in her coin purse. I keep that. I've never, ever spent it. But I also... I'm very wary of snatch thefts and I never take it out of the house either. Mm. So there's these weird connections and you're like, okay, maybe I'm not that weird after all. I do
not
have,
yeah,
you know, there's a lot of us who feel that way, you know, and the things that are the most precious to us are the, not necessarily the big jewelry or whatever, the simple little things that, you know, was our last connection with our loved ones. And, you know, as she said in that TED Talk, we also connect with posts that restore faith in humanity. So in this case, perhaps it was the fact that Haiza didn't just choose to keep the 10 ringgit note, but made an effort to find out who it belonged to. And I mean, who's going to take that kind of effort, right? That was wonderful of Haiza.
Yeah, I thought so as well.
Yeah.
And again, going back to how this was an instance of uniting people on social media. Mm. And that's what we also asked you on our Twitter poll, whether you think social media brings us together or divides us. So 65% of you think that it's divisive, with 35% of you say that it brings us together. And we also have a few comments on that. Born to Rebel says that it does both equally well. It's brought back long-lost friends back, but it's also created racial disunity. And we also have another rather heartwarming story on WhatsApp. So once I was on the train commuting to New York in the US when I fell asleep, and my parents' car keys had fallen out of my pocket. So after I left the train, only then did I realize that I lost the key. And my mother then posted on a local Facebook group with information about the lost keys, and incredibly later in the day she actually got them back. So a commuter riding back from the city had heard on the train loudspeaker that the conductor had found a car key and was trying to return them to the right person. So luckily the attentive commuter had also read the post on Facebook and was travelling on the same line home as the one where he lost the keys. So he thought that this might be the keys and retrieved them, eventually handing them off to the sender's mother. So all in one day. So sometimes social media can really make the best out of a sticky situation.
It's like a global PA system.
Yeah, right? It's an amazing story.
Yeah. I can't help but go back to the 65% of our poll takers who say social media divides us. Mm-hmm. And, you know, generally that's how I feel about social media. I feel that it's all about people just at the click of a button or being keyboard warriors, just bashing out comments without having the guts to stand behind it, honestly, saying things that they wouldn't normally say to someone's face.
Yes.
I picked this story just simply because it's just a little spark of hope, I think.
And I think the fact that news portals have picked up the story, it really shows how rare these instances are that social media becomes a uniting point, because otherwise then it's just an everyday occurrence and newspapers won't be posting about it.
I will say I read that apparently some of the comments after Anne was reunited with 10 ringgit note, and she posted some really touching messages about how grateful she was, how blessed she felt about, you know, Haiza's actions. Some people were commenting, you know, perhaps you should be more careful with your 10. So to me, right? So those are the sort of trolls coming to the surface, and that's where social media turns ugly.
Oh, I have a story related to that as well. It was about 6 years ago, my dog ran away during a thunderstorm. Mm. So I did the usual thing. I put it on Facebook, and it was really heartwarming to see that it was shared over 600 times. And, you know, everybody was trying to get the message out there. Then I made the mistake of reading the comments.
Right.
So my dog's name was Maggot, all right? Because when I found him, he was a maggot-infested little puppy. Obviously, there's the theme of stray dogs that goes with my story. And then people were saying, oh, no wonder your dog ran away. His name was Maggot.
You know, terrible.
My dog is lost. Obviously, I'm upset. Mm. You don't have to comment. I named him Maggot. He was a lovely dog. He loved me. I loved him. Why do you have to comment?
If you ask me, there's another maggot in the...
It's the real maggot.
If you have nothing better to say, I think it's better to not say anything.
Yeah.
And that's a problem with social media. Everyone thinks their opinions are valid.
Yeah.
Well, that's all the time we have for our stories today. If you still have any thoughts, tweet us at BFM Radio, WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899, or look us up on our Facebook page, BFM The Bigger Picture. You can drop us a message there as well. If you missed any part of the show, you can download the podcast at bfm.my/dailydigest or on our BFM app or on Spotify. You've been listening to The Daily Digest on The Bigger Picture. We leave you now with Everyday People by Sly and the Family Stone.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.